apple season has arrived in Wisconsin. Pick your own orchards are opening up. The early varieties are at the local farmers markets. So we thought we would celebrate the apple this hour with the author of Good Apples, Behind Every Bite. We'll find out what goes into growing and selling the apples that you buy or pick every fall. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. My husband and I went to a favorite local apple orchard last weekend, and we picked up a bag of Honeycrisps, Zestars, and then there was this golden variety, a golden delicious-looking variety. I can't recall its name, but I really loved it, and I plan to go back and get some more. Have you been out apple picking yet? Are you an apple grower? Are you involved in the apple business in any way? We would love to hear from you about what goes into getting our favorite apples to our tables. And if you have a favorite apple orchard or apple, if apple picking is a tradition in your family, please share with us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Susan Futrell, author of the book Good Apples, Behind Every Bite. She worked in food distribution and marketing for 35 years. She writes and speaks about eating local foods, sustainability, and all things apples. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you say that you think apples are taken for granted. Why do you say that?
Well, I think that they're so common and so familiar that it's easy to forget or not even realize all of the amazing effort and care and just also the amazing botany and biology that goes into producing that wonderful piece of fruit.
Yeah, and a lot goes into producing that fruit.
It does. It's a year-long process. Now we're seeing the most wonderful part of the year for eaters, but for people who grow apples, there's something to do with the trees all year long.
Yeah. So have you been out apple picking yet?
I have not, actually, but I have a wonderful local orchard near where I live, and I have been buying apples every week at the farmer's market here from a nearby orchard.
Yeah. I'm going to tell a story on my producer, Keely Bultina, who is new to Wisconsin Public Radio. She came to us from South Dakota Public Radio, not that that was that far away. But we had a little snack table get-together thing, and she brought a bunch of apples. But they were not local apples. Apparently they were, you know, apples that maybe came from Washington State. I don't know. Maybe they came from New Zealand. Sometimes when we're at the store, we might not even think about that.
Well, it's a good likelihood that those apples came from Washington State. About 65% of the apples grown in the United States are grown in that one state. It's more than all the other states put together. And they have a wonderful climate and growing conditions and a very well-established and very collaborative apple industry in Washington. So a lot of our apples come from there all year round, really.
Yeah. And again, it was Keely, this was before we decided to do this particular program, and she was very interested to learn more about local apples. And in Wisconsin, it seems to be a big deal. Lots of apple orchards, lots of people growing and sort of a family tradition that you go out and pick apples. So we may not grow as many apples as Washington State, but other states compete.
There are apples grown in every state in the United States, including Alaska and Hawaii. And so, yes, it's a fruit that and a tree that has sort of migrated from the east to the west across the country. Many people, including me, when I started the book, don't realize that apples are actually immigrant plants. They're not native. The kinds of apples we eat are not native to North America, They were brought here from Europe, and the industry of apples at one time was much more spread around the country. Particularly in the Midwest, there was once more larger scale commercial growing happening. These days, I think Wisconsin is a state that has more diverse agriculture probably than my home state of Iowa. But one of the things that's happened in agriculture over the last 100 years or so is a geographic concentration. So we grow corn and soybeans in Iowa, and they grow apples in Washington. And I think one of the wonderful things about the local food attention and interest that has grown up over the last few years is that it's helping to re-energize the idea that many different kinds of fruits and vegetables and foods can be grown in a lot of different places. So we see more interest in old orchards that have been there for a long time, but also a number of places where new orchards are being planted and farms are converting parts of their acres to growing fruit again, and that's a really wonderful thing.
In your book, you recount bidding on what you describe as the oldest apple orchard in Iowa when it went up for auction. You quickly lost, and you say losing local orchards is wrenching. Could you please read for us a couple of sentences from that particular part of Good Apples?
Sure. Yes, it was an impulsive thing on my part, watching an orchard that I had read about and knew about go up on the auction block, and not knowing what was going to become of it. So I felt at the time there was more at stake than a small orchard in an out-of-the-way part of a flyover state. It was about the soul of something, me, the land, the country. It was about how we feed ourselves, not just our bodies, but our sense of connection to each other, to our history, the land, and our responsibility for all of it.
Boy, and that is, that's powerful, and it makes me... Talk some more about that. That's a lot of importance to put on one auction, one orchard, one person.
Well, and I think part of what came to me that night, as I said, it was very impulsive, and it was very fortunate that I did not win the auction. I was sort of acting out of a sense that even though I knew that I wasn't the right person and didn't really have the capability, that something as deeply rooted and important shouldn't just disappear and become a housing development called Orchard Acres or whatever. So trying to understand my own connection to that and emotion is really part of what led me to write the book. And in doing that, talking with people who grow apples all across the country, and also the scientists who support that industry through public science in particular, I really got in touch with what I think is at the core of why that matters, is that it really truly is a common good, the way we grow our food. It's something that farmers and the people who pick food and grow food and support agriculture are providing to all of the rest of us. And we get so used to thinking of it as just something that we are owed almost. You go to the grocery store, you go to a restaurant, you expect to be fed and expect to be able to have this wonderful bounty. And yet, it really takes such an amazing combination of determination and knowledge and land to have that available to us. And yes, for some reason it became very powerful to me that night and since, as I've continued to work with this, that we all as eaters but also citizens have some sense of responsibility to help support a community of of farmers.
We are talking about the powerful apple, and we are talking about how the apple connects and builds community. We're wondering if you are an apple lover, an apple grower, or if you have a connection to the apple industry. We'd love to hear from you. What are your questions or experiences? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. We're talking with Susan Futrell, who is the author of Good Apples Behind Every Bite. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about apples, the importance of apples. We're talking about the power of the apple, an apple which is often overlooked, or we don't necessarily pay a whole lot of attention to these wonderful apples. We are this hour with our guest, Susan Futrell, who is the author of Good Apples. She has worked in food distribution and marketing for 35 years. She writes and speaks about local food, sustainability, and all things apples. And we're welcoming your questions for her. We're welcoming your thoughts about the apple business. We would love to hear from you. If you are someone who operates an orchard, are you an apple grower? Is the family orchard still doing well? Have you seen some changes over the years as you have cultivated apples? Do you have a favorite memory of apples? Do you go and pick your own in the fall? Is it a family tradition? Tell us about your fondness for apples. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's go to the phones. We have some callers. Pete in Green Bay is with us. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Joy. We're going to miss you on your retirement.
Thank you.
My question is, are there any biodynamic apple growers here in the state? And also, what would some organic apple growers be? I know most of the apples, there's a very intensive, toxic spraying program that one has to do to get good, nice, beautiful apples. And then the other question I do have a farm. I have a small orchard that I've been trying to do without any spraying or anything with mixed success. Information about where one could find guidance regarding how to do this, the biodynamic and organic growing of apples. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. And again, thanks for your kind words. I will miss you and other listeners too. Susan, first of all, what is biodynamic?
I bet your caller could answer that question better than I can.
I was going to ask him. Yeah.
It's a philosophy of growing that's very, I think, connected to how the soil and the ecosystem are functioning. How did I do there?
And the caller dropped off, so I'm sorry.
Okay.
I would have asked him, but anyway, that sounds good to me.
He asked a great question because that approach to farming, organic farming, which I know there's a lot of in Wisconsin, and all different kinds of approaches are something you see in apples. There are lots of different ways to grow them, but he's absolutely right in that it's very, very challenging to just grow apples without some sort of treatment to manage pests and diseases. And one of the reasons that so many of our apples in the U.S. come from Washington State is that the climate there is where in the apple-growing regions is drier and has, not that they don't have challenges, but they have far, far fewer both insect and disease pressures than we do here in the Midwest and in the Northeast, where the climate's much more, it's more humid, and also where the orchards are more mixed in with other kinds of farming and urban development. So organic apples are difficult to grow in some of those conditions, but there are people making good effort at it. Often, some of what apples have to be treated with is about cosmetics so that they will look good enough to make their way all the way to a supermarket or grocery store shelf. So if you're growing apples for yourself or you're selling at a farmer's market where you have the opportunity to talk to customers and explain what those spots might mean, that's a situation that makes it easier. Remind me the second question that he asked.
I think he just wanted to know if there was some resources as a small orchard, an apple grower trying to do organic apples, wondered if there were resources to help someone like him.
Sure. There are, I think one of the first places I would turn would probably be to your County Extension Service for resources. There are people in various parts of the country, and that's a network through the university and the extension offices that can help you find some of those things, including new research on managing pests with biological and other methods. Other growers, there's probably an apple network in every state, and many, many growers are trying out different production techniques. And there's also a wonderful author, Michael Phillips, who has written a couple of books. I think one is called The Apple Grower and one is called The Holistic Orchard. And he is very much a proponent of looking for organic and biological methods to grow fruit. One thing I do want to mention is that apples sometimes get called out for being a fruit that requires pesticides to grow well. But in the history of apples, the uses of chemicals actually has been on a fairly steady progression toward more and more, or I should say toward less and less toxic methods and more adoption of biological methods like predator insects that keep other insects under control and pheromones or mating, what they call mating disruption that interrupts the life cycle of pests at certain times of the year so that the pressure is reduced. And in general, even commercial apples that are not labeled with any particular environmental or ecological labeling are often grown using many of those kinds of techniques. Integrated pest management is kind of an umbrella name for all of it. So one of the things I hope people will take away from the book is just a sense that there's much more going on out there on the part of growers than you sometimes might expect in terms of learning and using different ways of making those apples look so beautiful.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm really happy that Eugene from Viola, one of our longtime listeners, called in to remind us that there is Turkey Ridge Organic Orchard near Gay's Mills.
Yes.
He says it's one of the few organic orchards in Wisconsin, and I just want to do a shout-out to Eugene and Turkey Ridge as he comes to Wisconsin Public Radio every fall when we have our membership drive and we have our pledge drive, and he brings boxes of apples from organic apples from Turkey Ridge as a gift of appreciation to Wisconsin Public Radio. So
I'm glad you mentioned that because I have actually visited that orchard, and he's right. It's a wonderful place, and they are one of the orchards that's really experimenting and working hard to find new organic ways of growing fruit. So
yeah, and I will say they're delicious apples, but they might have a mark or two on them, and it's not what you necessarily see at the grocery store. But I also learned recently of what is it called? The ugly apple movement, that orchards are saying, don't be afraid of ugly apples. They still taste as good as the other ones.
Yes, I think there's a part of, I think, what we as eaters can bring to this kind of community of apples is a little bit of that questioning. What do I really care about when I'm choosing apples or looking at them in the store? And really, most people care about freshness and flavor. And then everybody has a different favorite apple and kind of flavor they're looking for. But I think sort of bringing that to your own eating habits and buying habits is one of the things that can help keep apple growing diverse and support some of those growers like Turkey Ridge that are trying to be a little bit on the cutting edge.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org if you'd like to talk about apples or apple growing or apple eating. David and Raymond is with us. Hi, David.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Where is Raymond?
By Franksville. Technically, we are a town, but we no longer have a post office.
Oh.
so all of our mail goes to Franksville, but that's a good question.
I get it. Okay, thanks. Sorry. Sometimes yeah. I thought I knew every little burg in Wisconsin, but I guess I don't.
We're all familiar with the food category of comfort food. Well, if there was a category called happy food, I would vote apples into it and as the number one star attraction.
Why is that?
They have so much going for them. You've got color, variety, different textures. You've got the softer ones. You've got the crunchier ones. You mentioned Honeycrisp a little while ago. You've got the sweet. You've got the tart. To me, it's just, you will never have a nut related allergic reaction to them. You will never have a gluten problem with them. Your arteries will never sclerose. What's wrong with them?
There's nothing wrong with them, David. I love it. So they are America's number one happy food, according to David. Susan, you want to react?
I couldn't agree more. I think it is one of the reasons that they're common, as I said. They're familiar. These days you can buy them all year round, pretty much. But there is something wonderful about apples and also the people who grow them and spend so much time around them. So I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Thank you very much, David. And
he's right that they're very good for you. And I think one of the things that's so appealing about them is that, it's about as simple as food gets. If you pick an apple off a tree, you eat it right there in your hand. There's just nothing in between you and that experience and the fruit.
Yeah. And there are so many different varieties. I just mentioned Honeycrisp. That's my... Oh, I like it because it's sweet and crispy, and it's one of the earlier varieties. But I like other apples as well. But yeah, it's fun. You get to decide which texture you like, or if you want to make a pie versus you want to just eat it raw. And I mean, how many varieties are there?
Oh my goodness! I think if you wanted to look in history and say how many apples have been grown in the United States since the apples first came here, it's something like 16,000 different varieties. Nowadays, in the grocery store, of course, you don't see nearly that many. Maybe 7 or 8 at this time of year. But there are amazing, wonderful varieties being grown in orchards all over the place. And in fact, one of the things I love about apples is that they are so diverse. And part of the reason is that every apple seed produces its own unique kind of apple. So you don't actually plant an apple seed if you want to recreate the piece of fruit that you just ate that you loved so much, because you may get a good apple, you may not, in terms of taste. And so that's another reason why there are so many different varieties, is that they're constantly evolving new versions of themselves.
Yeah, I don't. We only have a couple of minutes before a news break, but It takes more than just planting an apple seed in the ground. Why is it that if I plant that apple seed from that apple I love, I'm not going to get that apple I love?
You know, the genetic explanation of that is something I won't even attempt. But what one way that's helpful for me to think about it is that an apple is much more like a humans in terms of their genetic characteristics than say a lettuce seed or a tomato seed where you plant it and you know how it's going to turn out. Because of the way the traits are combined in apple seeds, the fact that there's thousands of blossoms on a tree, they're pollinated by thousands of other blossoms, they just combine in a way that each seed is a unique genetic package. And so every apple tree that is reproducing a particular kind of apple, like a Honeycrisp, for example, which was developed at the University of Minnesota, mm-hmm. and every Honeycrisp tree that has been grown since then has been grafted with the genetic material of those original trees that were grown.
Yeah, and there's I'm trying to recall. There's big fights over over who gets to grow those apples too. I mean, are you involved in that part of the industry?
Another reason there are so many new and different apples coming out is that these days you can buy fruit from all over the world. In the stores in a way that you couldn't maybe 30 years ago, and so to keep people interested in apples, there's a lot of new apple breeding and development to come up with the latest, greatest, the next Honeycrisp, will. And one of the strategies that's been used for marketing apples is to develop them and then manage and control who can grow fruit of a particular variety. And so, it's been a contentious thing, particularly when some of those new fruits are coming from public labs that are, that are funded and supported by the public and growers. And I think it's taken a while for that system to evolve a little bit and be beneficial to the growers who are buying into a certain brand of apple or variety, but of course that process that benefits some people because they have the apple that everybody wants is also challenging for someone who doesn't grow that apple and wants to be able to offer their customers the same variety. So it's an interesting way that the marketing process has overlaid something that used to be just much more straightforward.
We are talking about apples and what goes into growing that apple that you love, and we're welcoming your questions for our guest, who is the author of Good Apples, Behind Every Bite, which takes us behind the scenes when it comes to growing and marketing the apple as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, apple picking season is here in Wisconsin, at least for the southern half of the state. And we are talking with an apple enthusiast, Susan Futrell, who is the author of Good Apples, Behind Every Bite, about how apples are important, about social and environmental changes that affect the crop and its growers and sellers and buyers. And we are welcoming your questions for her. We're welcoming your favorite local apple orchard or favorite variety of apple. We're welcoming what you do. How do you like your apples? We're welcoming. We'd love to hear from you if you grow apples, either in your backyard or if you're an orchard grower. How's that working for you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We had a call from John in Wanakee who could not stay with us, but he has been looking for ambrosia apples, and he's having a hard time finding them in stores or in orchards. And he wonders, is this a variety that doesn't do well in Midwest states like Wisconsin? So do you know, Susan, about the ambrosia apple?
That's a good question, because it's a little bit of an interesting story. So I said earlier that the process of developing and marketing new varieties used to be more straightforward, and I think that's true, but it's always been a feature of growing apples that growers are looking for the next great apple. They're comparing notes with other growers and looking for something that they've got that's the apple that everyone will want. And ambrosia came somewhat from that same kind of process. It was a seedling that grew up on an apple orchard in Canada, and the grower let it go and tasted the apples, and after a few years decided this one's really good. This one's worth keeping, and so that variety has now been licensed to a larger grower. Packer in Washington State, I believe, and it is a good example of one of those apples that I don't know that it wouldn't grow well in the upper Midwest, but I think because it is competing in the marketplace with apples from all over the world and all these other new varieties, in order for the growers who have ambrosia apples to keep it as something like your caller would be searching for and looking for and wanting to find rather than an apple that they can get anywhere, to grow ambrosia apples and buy the trees, you would need to be licensed by the company, the apple orchard that owns and manages that variety. So I would say you might go on the internet. Often people will ship apples, and I know there are growers in Washington State growing ambrosia. I've never tasted one myself, but it is reported to be a great apple.
That's interesting, and because I have noticed when we've done shows on apples in the past, and recently I posted on Facebook that I was picking up apples at the local apple orchard, and someone said, you've got to come to Door County and get the Sweet Tango apple, and that's the only place that I'm aware of the Sweet Tango apple being, but maybe it's somewhere else, but it could be based on what you're saying.
Well, I was going to say that is another licensed apple variety, Sweet Tango. That's one that came from University of Minnesota, so it's a Midwest apple. Mm-hmm. It's also one that there was some controversy about when it was released because it was a controlled. It was one of the first that was a controlled licensed release, and I think part of what's interesting about that whole strategy is that it is one of the ways that both growers and universities in an environment where funding for this kind of research has been on the decline now for many, many years. And so one of the ways Apple researchers and labs are looking to help support their work is to find ways to make it more commercially viable and to bring some money back into the system. So Sweet Tango was developed here. There's also, I was going to suggest to the caller, they might look for a couple of other new varieties that have been developed in the Midwest. One is called Pizzazz, mm-hmm. and that's a grower controlled. Some of these are co-ops of growers that are doing the apple breeding. Some of them are private. There's all kinds of different places where this is happening. So Pizzazz is a good one. The other one just left my mind, and I'll think of it in a minute.
Is there an apple called the Pepin? Like as in Pepin, Wisconsin, and I thought the University of Minnesota had something to do with
there
that.
There could very well be, and that's one I'm not familiar with. The red delicious apple that you see everywhere these days, and that has been kind of a mainstay for American apples for a long time, actually has a history very much like the history you would hear of an old heirloom apple. It grew up in a farmer's field, actually, in the middle of Iowa. And once again, kind of let it grow. Apples tasted pretty good, and over time, that one too was the variety was purchased and marketed and became the number one selling apple in the world for a long, long time.
We have so many callers now, but I was going to ask you when you just brought that up: is everybody looking for the new Honeycrisp, or is anybody trying to bring back that or keep that wonderful heirloom apple?
A little bit of both, I think. The market for heirloom apples is not as big. Most people buy their apples still in the grocery store, and there's only so much space, and they can only put so many varieties out in the grocery store. So that's where the Honeycrisp, you know, people are anything that will make people that excited about an apple and that excited to look for it when it comes every year. That's what people are looking for. There's a big community though of heirloom enthusiasts, and I think a little bit of a resurgence of those apples. And those are the kind of apples often you can only find in a farmer's market or at an orchard.
Let me take a call from Andy in Oshkosh. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Joy. What a beautiful day in Wisconsin here.
It is. So what are you looking for in terms of apples?
Yes, I have a Honeycrisp apple tree, and last year I fell short. My dog ate plenty of my apples. The bugs got them, and this year I'm looking at about 50 beautiful Honeycrisp apples, and I don't want to pick them too early or too late, and looking at what's the peak time to pick my Honeycrisp apples.
In East Central Wisconsin. I don't know if you know, Susan.
I don't, and that is another thing about apples is that they're very, the particular growing conditions you have and the season and the variety all would determine the right time. So I would say again, check with your extension folks or other apple growers. And I did have a grower one time show me that if you cut an apple open sideways so that you can see that beautiful star inside where the seeds are. If the seeds are still white, it's probably not ready.
Ah.
And if they're turning brown, it's closer to being ripe. That's as close as I can come to telling you when to pick your apples. Probably tasting them is the ultimate test.
Yeah. Andy, thanks for calling. Andy's got the right idea of growing his own Honeycrisps.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that is really great. Why are Honeycrisps so much more expensive than other apples?
Well, I think it's partly the very reason that you said people will pay.
Mm-hmm.
they're such a crisp and juicy apple that people are willing to pay a little extra for them. They wait for them to come, and for apple growers who are struggling often to find markets and keep their fruit on the shelves, that's premium. They also can be a little more challenging to grow, different diseases and depending on the climate. So there's a little extra work that goes into them. And that also adds to the price.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Linda in Mount Horeb. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, Linda. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to put a plug in for our neighbors, Munchkey Apples. They're on Drummond Valley Road. It's about 12 miles southwest of Mount Horeb. It's a family-owned farm. They add on every year. I think they have over 7,000 apples, and they opened up a pick-your-own as well as their shop where they sell the apples. And I just went down there the other day, and they built a kitchen. They're making fresh apple pies. I think they have hard cider. Oh, the kids.
Oh, my goodness. They have it all. Hard cider as well.
Yeah,
that's that. What's the name of it again, Linda?
It's Munchkey Apples.
Wait, as in munching, as in you munch apples?
Yes, Munchkey Apples. And I'm not sure if one of the kids named it or not, but
Well, thank you, Linda, for calling in, and I'll check it out. That's for sure. Sounds like a great place. Can you talk a little bit, Susan? We only have a couple minutes left about, you know, family owned orchards and, you know, that the pick your own and bake a pie kind of operations. Is that a big part of the apple business?
Sure. There are many orchards that do a combination of pick your own and selling direct and also wholesaling their apples. Of course, by far the majority of apples in the U.S. are sold through wholesale channels that get into grocery stores, and that's where most people buy most of the time. But the pick your own and buying from a farm stand like that is a really fabulous way for smaller operation to be able to do well economically if they're able to sell without those intermediaries. And it's also just a wonderful way to be able to learn about apples and help your kids have an experience of where food actually comes from and all of those wonderful things about going to an orchard. One of the interesting things that I have learned about apples is that by far the majority of apple orchards in the country, no matter what size, are mostly family-owned operations, and the families often many, many generations. The, you know, trees produce fruit for decades and sometimes hundreds of years. So those operations, a lot of them are family orchards that people can support and enjoy.
Yeah. We are almost out of time. I want to pass along that Lois, who works at Sunrise Orchard in Gays Mills, says that the Ambrosia apple is a later apple in Wisconsin. It will be ready in mid-October. So,
aha!
There we go.
Good to know. Good to know.
And, well, happy apple picking and eating, Susan. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, and enjoy every apple you eat.
We will. Susan Futrell, author of Good Apples. This is the Ideas Network.